In late March 2002, Pakistani government authorities, working with the CIA, captured al-Qaeda facilitator Abu Zubaydah in a raid during which Abu Zubaydah suffered bullet wounds. At that time, Abu Zubaydah was assessed by CIA officers in Alex Station, the office within the CIA with specific responsibility for al-Qaeda, to possess detailed knowledge of al-Qaeda terrorist attack plans. However, as is described in greater detail in the full committee study, this assessment significantly overstated Abu Zubaydah's role in al-Qaeda and the information he was likely to possess. On the day that Abu Zubaydah was captured, CIA attorneys discussed interpretations of the criminal prohibition on torture that might permit CIA officers to engage in certain interrogation activities. An attorney in CTC also sent an email with the subject line "Torture Update" to Redacted, CTC Legal Redacted, listing, without commentary, the restrictions on interrogation in the Geneva Conventions, the Convention Against Torture, and the criminal prohibition on torture. In late March 2002, anticipating its eventual custody of Abu Zubaydah, the CIA began considering options for his transfer to CIA custody and detention under the MON. The CIA rejected U.S. military custody, redacted, in large part because of the lack of security and the fact that Abu Zubaydah would have to be declared to the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC. The CIA's concerns about custody at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, included the general lack of secrecy and the possible loss of control to U.S. military and/or FBI. Rendition to country redacted was rejected because of the perception that the results of that country's recent interrogations had been disappointing, as well as the intense interest in Abu Zubaydah from CIA leadership. As Alex Station wrote, the CIA needed to participate directly in the interrogation, not because we believe necessarily we can improve on country redacted's performance, but because the reasons for the lack of progress will be transparent and reportable up the line. Over the course of 4 days, the CIA settled on a detention site in country redacted because of that country's redacted and the lack of U.S. court jurisdiction. The only disadvantages identified by the CIA with detention in country redacted were that it would not be a USG-controlled facility and that diplomatic/policy decisions would be required. As a March 28, 2002 CIA document acknowledged, the proposal to render Abu Zubaydah to country redacted had not yet been broached with that country's officials. The document also warned, "We can't guarantee security. If AZ's presence does become known, not clear what the impact would be." The decision to detain Abu Zubaydah at a covert detention facility in country redacted did not involve the input of the National Security Council Principals Committee, the Department of State, the U.S. Ambassador, or the CIA Chief of Station in country redacted. On March 29, 2002, an email from the office of the deputy DCI stated that, "We will have to acknowledge certain gaps in our planning/preparations, but this is the option the DDCI will lead with for POTUS consideration." That morning, the president approved moving forward with a plan to transfer Abu Zubaydah to country redacted. During the same presidential daily brief, PDB session, Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld suggested exploring the option of putting Abu Zubaydah on a ship. However, CIA records do not indicate any further input from the principals. That day, the CIA station in country redacted obtained the approval of country redacted's redacted officials for the CIA detention site. The U.S. Deputy Chief of Mission in country redacted, who was notified by the CIA station after country redacted's leadership, concurred in the absence of the ambassador, redacted. Shortly thereafter, Abu Zubaydah was rendered from Pakistan to country redacted, where he was held at the first CIA detention site, referred to in the summary as Detention Site Green. CIA records indicate that country redacted was the last location of a CIA detention facility known to the president or the vice president, as subsequent locations were kept from the principals as a matter of White House policy to avoid inadvertent disclosures of the location of the CIA detention sites.
Note 75. CIA records indicate that the CIA had not informed policymakers of the presence of CIA detention facilities in countries redacted, 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 and redacted. It is less clear whether policymakers were aware of the detention facilities in country redacted and at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
3. Tensions with host country leadership and media attention foreshadow future challenges. The day after the rendition of Abu Zubaydah to detention site Green, the redacted, which was responsible for the security of the detention facility, linked its support for the CIA's detention site to a request for redacted support from the CIA redacted. The CIA eventually provided the requested redacted support redacted. According to CIA cables and internal documents, redacted prompted redacted to replace redacted individuals responsible for supporting the CIA's detention facility. Those officials were replaced by different officials whom the CIA believed were not supportive of the CIA's detention site. Despite considerable effort by the CIA's station and country redacted to retain support for detention site Green from its new redacted partners, redacted called for the closing of the CIA detention facility within 3 weeks. Continued lobbying by the chief of station, however, eventually led country redacted to reverse this decision, allowing detention site Green to remain operational.
Note 80. The CIA's June 2013 response states that it was only as leaks detailing the program began to emerge that foreign partners felt compelled to alter the scope of their involvement. As described, however, the tensions with country redacted were unrelated to public revelations about the program.
On April, redacted, 2002, the CIA station in country redacted attempted to list the number of country redacted officers who, to the best of station's knowledge, had knowledge of the presence of Abu Zubaydah in a specific city and country redacted. The list included 8 individuals, references to various personnel redacted, and the staff of redacted, and concluded with doubtless many others. By April, redacted, 2002, a media organization had learned that Abu Zubaydah was in country redacted, prompting the CIA to explain to the media organization the security implications of revealing the information. The CIA station in country redacted also expressed concern that press inquiries would do nothing for our liaison and bilateral relations, possibly diminishing chances that the redacted of country redacted will permit Abu Zubaydah to remain in country, or that he would accept other Abu Zubaydah-like renderees in the future. In November 2002, after the CIA learned that a major U.S. newspaper knew that Abu Zubaydah was in country redacted, senior CIA officials, as well as Vice President Cheney, urged the newspaper not to publish the information. While the U.S. newspaper did not reveal country redacted as the location of Abu Zubaydah, the fact that it had the information, combined with the previous media interest, resulted in the decision to close detention site Green.
4. FBI officers are the first to question Abu Zubaydah, who states he intends to cooperate. Abu Zubaydah is taken to a hospital where he provides information the CIA later describes as important and vital. After Abu Zubaydah was rendered to detention site Green on March, redacted, 2002, he was questioned by special agents from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, who spoke Arabic and had experience interrogating members of Al-Qaeda. Abu Zubaydah confirmed his identity to the FBI officers, informed the FBI officers he wanted to cooperate, and provided background information on his activities. That evening, Abu Zubaydah's medical condition deteriorated rapidly, and he required immediate hospitalization. Although Abu Zubaydah was largely unable to communicate because of a breathing tube, he continued to provide information to FBI and CIA officials at the hospital using an Arabic alphabet chart. According to records, the FBI officers remained at Abu Zubaydah's bedside throughout this ordeal and assisted in his medical care. When Abu Zubaydah's breathing tube was removed on April 8, 2002, Abu Zubaydah provided additional intelligence and reiterated his intention to cooperate. During an April 10, 2002 debriefing session conducted in the hospital's intensive care unit, Abu Zubaydah revealed to the FBI officers that an individual named Mukhtar was the Al-Qaeda mastermind of the 9/11 attacks. Abu Zubaydah identified a picture of Mukhtar provided by the FBI from the FBI's most wanted list. The picture was of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, who had been indicted in 1996 for his role in Ramzi Youssef's terrorist plotting to detonate explosives on 12 United States-flagged aircraft and destroy them mid-flight over the Pacific Ocean. Abu Zubaydah told the interrogators that Mukhtar was related to Ramzi Youssef, whom Abu Zubaydah said was in an American jail. Youssef had been convicted for the aforementioned terrorist plotting and was involved in the 1993 World Trade Center terrorist attack. Zubaydah told the FBI officers that Mukhtar trained the 9/11 hijackers and also provided additional information on KSM's background, to include that KSM spoke fluent English, was approximately 34 years old, and was responsible for Al-Qaeda's operations outside of Afghanistan. Subsequent representations on the success of the CIA's detention and interrogation program consistently describe Abu Zubaydah's identification of KSM's role in the September 11, 2001 attacks, as well as his identification of KSM's alias, Mukhtar, as being important and vital information. A review of CIA records found that this information was corroborative of information already in CIA databases. 5. While Abu Zubaydah is hospitalized, CIA headquarters discusses the use of coercive interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah. While Abu Zubaydah was still hospitalized, personnel at CIA headquarters began discussing how CIA officers would interrogate Abu Zubaydah upon his return to detention site Green. The initial CIA interrogation proposal recommended that the interrogators engage with Abu Zubaydah to get him to provide information and suggested that a hard approach involving foreign government personnel be taken only as a last resort. At a meeting about this proposal, Redacted, CTC Legal, Redacted, recommended that a psychologist working on contract in the CIA's Office of Technical Services, OTS, Grayson Swigert, be used by CTC to provide real-time recommendations to overcome Abu Zubaydah's resistance to interrogation. Swigert had come to Redacted's attention through Redacted, who worked in OTS. Shortly thereafter, CIA headquarters formally proposed that Abu Zubaydah be kept in an all-white room that was lit 24 hours a day, that Abu Zubaydah not be provided any amenities, that his sleep be disrupted, that loud noises be constantly fed into his cell, and that only a small number of people interact with him. CIA records indicate that these proposals were based on the idea that such conditions would lead Abu Zubaydah to develop a sense of learned helplessness. CIA headquarters then sent an interrogation team to country Redacted, including Swigert, whose initial role was to consult on the psychological aspects of the interrogation. DCI Tenet was provided an update on the Abu Zubaydah interrogation plans on April 12, 2002. The update stated that the CIA team was preparing for Abu Zubaydah's transfer back to detention site Green, and noted the CIA interrogation team intended to set the stage and increase control over Abu Zubaydah. The update stated, "Our CIA lead interrogator will require Abu Zubaydah to reveal the most sensitive secret he knows we are seeking. If he dissembles or diverts the conversation, the interview will stop and resume at a later time. In accordance with the strategy and with concurrence from FBI headquarters, the two on-site FBI agents will no longer directly participate in the interview/debriefing sessions." The FBI special agents questioning Abu Zubaydah at the hospital objected to the CIA's plans. In a message to FBI headquarters, an FBI special agent wrote that the CIA psychologists had acquired tremendous influence. The message further stated, "AZ's health has improved over the last 2 days, and agency CIA is ready to move Abu Zubaydah out of the hospital and back to Redacted on Redacted in an elaborate plan to change AZ's environment. Agency CIA advised this day that they will be immediately changing tactics in all future AZ interviews by having only their CIA officer interact with AZ. There will be no FBI presence in interview room. This change contradicts all conversations had to date. They believe AZ is offering throwaway information and holding back from providing threat information. It should be noted that we have obtained critical information regarding AZ thus far and have now got him speaking about threat information, albeit from his hospital bed and not an appropriate interview environment for full follow-up due to his health. Suddenly, the psychiatric team here wants AZ to only interact with their CIA officer, and the CIA sees this as being the best way to get threat information. We offered several compromise solutions. All suggestions were immediately declined without further discussion. This, again, is quite odd, as all information obtained from AZ has come from FBI lead interviewers and questioning. I have spent an incalculable amount of hours at Abu Zubaydah's bedside, assisting with medical help, holding his hand, and comforting him through various medical procedures, even assisting him in going to the bathroom. We have built tremendous rapport with AZ, and now that we are on the eve of regular interviews to get threat information, we have been written out of future interviews. 6. New CIA interrogation plan focuses on Abu Zubaydah's most important secret. FBI temporarily barred from the questioning of Abu Zubaydah. Abu Zubaydah then placed in isolation for 47 days without questioning. On April 13, 2002, while Abu Zubaydah was still at the hospital, the CIA implemented the new interrogation program. This initial meeting was held with just one interrogator in the room and lasted 11 minutes. A cable stated that the CIA interrogator was coached by the psychological team. The CIA interrogator advised Abu Zubaydah that he, Abu Zubaydah, had a most important secret that the interrogator needed to know. According to the cable, Abu Zubaydah amazingly nodded in agreement about the secret, but did not divulge any information as the interrogation team expected. A cable further explained that Abu Zubaydah indicated that he understood that the key question was about impending future terrorist plans against the United States, and that the CIA officer told Abu Zubaydah to signal for him when he decides to discuss that one key item he knows he is keeping from the interrogator. The FBI officers provided a similar account to FBI headquarters, adding that, "We spent the rest of the day in the adjoining room with the CIA officer and one of the psychiatrists, redacted, waiting for Abu Zubaydah to signal he was ready to talk. Abu Zubaydah apparently went to sleep. They did not approach Abu Zubaydah the rest of the day." In their communication with FBI headquarters, the FBI officers wrote that they explained their rapport-building approaches to the CIA interrogation team and tried to explain that we have used this approach before on other Al-Qaeda members with much success, Al-Awhali, KKM, Jandal, Badawi, etc. We tried to politely suggest that valuable time was passing where we could attempt to solicit threat information. On April 15, 2002, per a scripted plan, the same CIA interrogator delivered what a CIA cable described as the pre-move message to Abu Zubaydah, that time is running out, that his situation had changed, and that the interrogator was disappointed that Abu Zubaydah did not signal to discuss the one thing he was hiding. Abu Zubaydah was sedated and moved from the hospital to detention site Green. When Abu Zubaydah awoke at 11 p.m., 4 hours after his arrival, he was described as surprised and disturbed by his new situation. On April 16, 2002, cable states the objective is to ensure that Abu Zubaydah is at his most vulnerable state. A cable described Abu Zubaydah's cell as white with no natural lighting or windows, but with 4 halogen lights pointed into the cell. An air conditioner was also in the room. A white curtain separated the interrogation room from the cell. The interrogation cell had 3 padlocks. Abu Zubaydah was also provided with 1 of 2 chairs that were rotated based on his level of cooperation, one described as more comfortable than the other. Security officers wore all black uniforms, including boots, gloves, balaclavas, and goggles, to keep Abu Zubaydah from identifying the officers, as well as to prevent Abu Zubaydah from seeing the security guards as individuals whom he may attempt to establish a relationship or dialogue with. The security officers communicated by hand signals when they were with Abu Zubaydah and used handcuffs and leg shackles to maintain control. In addition, either loud rock music was played or noise generators were used to enhance Abu Zubaydah's sense of hopelessness. Abu Zubaydah was typically kept naked and sleep-deprived. An April 16, 2002 cable explained that the interrogation strategy had shifted since Abu Zubaydah's medical condition prevented total isolation as originally planned. According to the cable, a 24-hour interrogation strategy was now deemed to be the best approach for acquiring information. As a result, the FBI officers were once again allowed to question Abu Zubaydah. On April 17, 2002, an FBI officer met with Abu Zubaydah for 6 hours. FBI records state that Abu Zubaydah had not seen the interviewing FBI agent since April 11, 2002, but that Abu Zubaydah greeted the agent by name. During the questioning, Abu Zubaydah denied any knowledge related to specific targets for a pending attack and advised that many of the brothers on the front lines, NFI, no further information, talked about all types of attacks against America, but that for the most part this was usually just talk and that the United States should not be concerned about this type of talk. Abu Zubaydah provided information on Al-Qaeda, KSM, his past travel to the United States, as well as general information on extremists in Pakistan. Abu Zubaydah continued to provide information to interrogators throughout April 2002, but not information on pending attacks against the United States. On the evening of April 20, 2002, Abu Zubaydah told the FBI officers about two men who approached him with a plan to detonate a uranium-based explosive device in the United States. Abu Zubaydah stated he did not believe the plan was viable and did not know the names of the two individuals, but provided physical descriptions of the pair. This information was acquired after Abu Zubaydah was confronted with emails indicating that he had sent the two individuals to KSM. The CIA would later represent that this information was acquired as a result of the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, and that the information acquired resulted in the thwarting of the dirty bomb plot and the capture of Jose Padilla. However, the chief of the Abu Zubaydah task force stated that AZ's info alone would never have allowed us to find them, while another CIA officer stated that the CIA was already alert to the threat posed by Jose Padilla, and that the CIA's suspicion was only enhanced during the debriefings of Abu Zubaydah. Additional information on the dirty bomb plot and the capture of Jose Padilla is provided later in this summary.
Note 122. CIA email from redacted to redacted. Subject, AZ information. Date, July 10, 2002, at 1:18:50 p.m. The email states, "The only way we put this together is that PACI liaison mentioned to Redacted the arrest of two individuals, one being an American, and Redacted put two and two together. Therefore, AZ's info alone would never have allowed us to find them." See also SSCI transcript, Detention of Jose Padilla, in which a CIA officer states, "The Pakistani liaison felt it was important to bring Padilla to our attention, given the recent raids. There was enough information indicating that his travel was suspicious to put us on alert. This suspicion was enhanced during the debriefings of Abu Zubaydah, which occurred on 21st of April.
During the month of April 2002, which included a period during which Abu Zubaydah was hospitalized, on life support, and unable to speak, the CIA disseminated 39 intelligence reports based on his interrogations. At the end of April 2002, the Detention Site Green interrogation team provided CIA headquarters with three interrogation strategies. CIA headquarters chose the most coercive interrogation option, which was proposed and supported by CIA contractor Swigert. This coercive interrogation option, which included sensory deprivation, was again opposed by the FBI special agents at the detention site. The interrogation proposal was to engage in only a single-minded, consistent, totally focused questioning of current threat information. Once implemented, this approach failed to produce the information CIA headquarters believed Abu Zubaydah possessed, threats to the United States and information about Al-Qaeda operatives located in the United States. Nonetheless, Abu Zubaydah continued to provide other intelligence. In May 2002, the CIA disseminated 56 intelligence reports based on the interrogations. In early June 2002, the CIA interrogation team recommended that Abu Zubaydah spend several weeks in isolation while the interrogation team members departed the facility as a means of keeping Abu Zubaydah off balance and to allow the team needed time off for a break and to attend to personal matters, as well as to discuss the endgame of Abu Zubaydah, redacted, with officers from CIA headquarters. As a result, from June 18, 2002 through August 4, 2002, Abu Zubaydah spent 47 days in isolation without being asked any questions. Despite the fact that Abu Zubaydah was in isolation for nearly half of the month, the CIA disseminated 37 intelligence reports based on the interrogations of Abu Zubaydah in June 2002. The CIA would later represent publicly, as well as in classified settings, that during the use of established U.S. government interrogation techniques, Abu Zubaydah stopped all cooperation in June 2002, requiring the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. CIA records do not support this assertion. Prior to Abu Zubaydah's 47-day isolation period, Abu Zubaydah provided information on Al-Qaeda's activities, plans, capabilities, and relationships, in addition to information on its leadership structure, including personalities, decision-making processes, training, and tactics. As described in more detail in the full committee study, Abu Zubaydah's inability to provide information on the next attack in the United States and operatives in the United States served as the basis for CIA representations that Abu Zubaydah was uncooperative, as well as for the CIA's determination that Abu Zubaydah required the use of what would later be known as the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to become compliant and reveal the information the CIA believed he was withholding. Abu Zubaydah never provided this information, and CIA officers later concluded this was information Abu Zubaydah did not possess. After Abu Zubaydah was placed in isolation, the Abu Zubaydah interrogation team, redacted, departed country, redacted. Security and medical personnel remained at the detention site. The FBI special agents did not return to detention site Green. 7. Proposal by CIA contract personnel to use SEER-based interrogation techniques leads to the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The CIA determines that the interrogation process takes precedence over preventative medical procedures. In early July 2002, CIA officers held several meetings at CIA headquarters to discuss the possible use of novel interrogation methods on Abu Zubaydah. During the course of those meetings, Swigert proposed using techniques derived from the U.S. military's SEER, Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape School.
Note 135. For more information on the SEER program, see the Senate Armed Services Committee inquiry into the treatment of detainees in U.S. custody, December 2008. See also Statement of Senator Carl Levin on the inquiry, December 11, 2008. Quote, SEER training is intended to be used to teach our soldiers how to resist interrogation by enemies that refuse to follow the Geneva Conventions and international law. In SEER school, our troops who are at risk of capture are exposed in a controlled environment with great protections and caution to techniques adapted from abusive tactics used against American soldiers by enemies such as the Communist Chinese during the Korean War. SEER training techniques include stress positions, forced nudity, use of fear, sleep deprivation, and, until recently, the Navy SEER school used the waterboard. These techniques were designed to give our students a taste of what they might be subjected to if captured by a ruthless, lawless enemy, so that they would be better prepared to resist. The techniques were never intended to be used against detainees in U.S. custody. As one Joint Personnel Recovery Agency instructor explained, SEER training is based on illegal exploitation under the rules listed in the 1949 Geneva Convention relative to the treatment of prisoners of war of prisoners over the last 50 years.
Swigert provided a list of 12 SEER techniques for possible use by the CIA. 1. The attention grasp. 2. Walling. 3. Facial hold. 4. Facial slap. 5. Cramped confinement. 6. Wall standing. 7. Stress positions. 8. Sleep deprivation. 9. Waterboard. 10. Use of diapers. 11. Use of insects. And 12. Mock burial. Swigert also recommended that the CIA enter into a contract with Hammond Dunbar, his co-author of the CIA report on potential Al-Qaeda interrogation resistance training, to aid in the CIA interrogation process. Like Swigert, Dunbar had never participated in a real-world interrogation. His interrogation experience was limited to the paper he authored with Swigert and his work with U.S. Air Force personnel at the SEER School.
Note 138. All other experience in the section related to his interrogation experience as a contractor for the CIA beginning in 2002. Dunbar's resume did state that he had participated in an interrogation training course in 1992 and that he had taken a one-week defense interrogation course at some point in 2002, although his resume does not indicate whether this was prior to or after the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah. The CIA's June 2013 response states that the committee study was incorrect in asserting that the contractor selected had no relevant experience. The CIA's June 2013 response notes Swigert and Dunbar's experience at the Department of Defense SEER School and Swigert's academic research and research papers on such topics as resistance training, captivity familiarization, and learned helplessness, all of which were relevant to the development of the program. The CIA's June 2013 response does not describe any experience related to actual interrogations or counterterrorism, or any relevant cultural, geographic, or linguistic expertise. The CIA's June 2013 response provides the following explanation. Dr. Swigert and Dunbar had the closest proximate expertise CIA sought at the beginning of the program, specifically in the area of non-standard means of interrogation. Experts on traditional interrogation methods did not meet this requirement. Non-standard interrogation methodologies were not an area of expertise of CIA officers or of the U.S. government generally. We believe their expertise was so unique that we would have been derelict had we not sought them out when it became clear that CIA would be heading into the uncharted territory of the program. As noted above, the CIA did not seek out Swigert and Dunbar after a decision was made to use coercive interrogation techniques. Rather, Swigert and Dunbar played a role in convincing the CIA to adopt such a policy.
In May 2003, a senior CIA interrogator would tell personnel from the CIA's Office of Inspector General that Swigert and Dunbar's SEER school model was based on resisting North Vietnamese physical torture and was designed to extract confessions for propaganda purposes from U.S. airmen who possessed little actionable intelligence. The CIA, he believed, needed a different working model for interrogating terrorists where confessions are not the ultimate goal. After the July 2002 meetings, the CIA's redacted CTC Legal, redacted, drafted a letter to Attorney General John Ashcroft, asking the Department of Justice for a formal declination of prosecution in advance for any employees of the United States, as well as any other personnel acting on behalf of the United States, who may employ methods in the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah that otherwise might subject those individuals to prosecution. The letter further indicated that the interrogation team had concluded that the use of more aggressive methods is required to persuade Abu Zubaydah to provide the critical information we need to safeguard the lives of innumerable innocent men, women, and children within the United States and abroad. The letter added that these aggressive methods would otherwise be prohibited by the torture statute, apart from potential reliance upon the doctrines of necessity or of self-defense. This letter was circulated internally at the CIA, including to Swigert. However, there are no records to indicate it was provided to the Attorney General. On July 13, 2002, redacted, CTC Legal, redacted, and the CIA's acting general counsel, John Rizzo, met with attorneys from the National Security Council and the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel, OLC, as well as with Michael Chertoff, the head of the Department of Justice Criminal Division, and Daniel Levin, the chief of staff to the FBI director, to provide an overview of the CIA's proposed interrogation techniques and to ask for a formal, definitive DOJ opinion regarding the lawfulness of employing the specific CIA interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah. The CIA attorneys described the 12 proposed interrogation techniques and told the Department of Justice and National Security Council attorneys that Abu Zubaydah continued to withhold critical intelligence on the identities of Al-Qaeda personnel in the United States and planned Al-Qaeda attacks. The CIA attorneys also told the group that CIA officers were complemented by expert personnel retained on contract who possess extensive experience gained within the Department of Defense on the psychological and physical methods of interrogation and the resistance techniques employed as countermeasures to such interrogation. According to the CIA cable describing the meeting, the representatives from the OLC, including Deputy Assistant Attorney General John Yu, advised that the criminal prohibition on torture would not prohibit the methods proposed by the interrogation team because of the absence of any specific intent to inflict severe physical or mental pain or suffering. On July 13, 2002, Yu sent an unclassified letter to the CIA's acting general counsel describing his interpretation of the statute. Despite the initial view expressed by Yu that the use of the proposed CIA interrogation techniques would be lawful, on July 17, 2002, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice requested a delay in the approval of the interrogation techniques for Abu Zubaydah's interrogation until the Attorney General issued an opinion. The following day, Rice and Deputy National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley requested that the Department of Justice delay the approval of the memo detailing the next phase of interrogations until the CIA provided specific details on its proposed interrogation techniques and an explanation of why the CIA is confident these techniques will not cause lasting and irreparable harm to Abu Zubaydah. Rice asked the CIA to provide the OLC with a description of each of the planned interrogation techniques and to gather and provide any available empirical data on the reactions and likelihood of prolonged mental harm from the use of the waterboard and the staged burial. On July 15, 2002, a cable providing details on the proposed interrogation phase stated that only the detention site Green Chief of Base would be allowed to interrupt or stop an interrogation in process, and that the Chief of Base would be the final decision-making authority as to whether the CIA's interrogation techniques applied to Abu Zubaydah would be discontinued. The CIA officers at the detention site added, "If Abu Zubaydah develops a serious medical condition which may involve a host of conditions, including a heart attack or another catastrophic type of condition, all efforts will be made to ensure that proper medical care will be provided to him. In the event Abu Zubaydah dies, we need to be prepared to act accordingly, keeping in mind the liaison equities involving our hosts." To address these issues, the cable stated that if Abu Zubaydah were to die during the interrogation, he would be cremated. The interrogation team closed the cable by stating, "Regardless which disposition option we follow, however, and especially in light of the planned psychological pressure techniques to be implemented, we need to get reasonable assurances that Abu Zubaydah will remain in isolation and incommunicado for the remainder of his life." Officers from the CIA's Alec Station responded to the interrogation team's comments several days later. Their cable noted that the interrogation team was correct in its understanding that the interrogation process takes precedence over preventative medical procedures. Alec Station further observed, "There is a fairly unanimous sentiment within HQS that Abu Zubaydah will never be placed in a situation where he has any significant contact with others and/or has the opportunity to be released." While it is difficult to discuss specifics at this point, all major players are in concurrence that Abu Zubaydah should remain incommunicado for the remainder of his life. This may preclude Abu Zubaydah from being turned over to another country, but a final decision regarding his future incarceration condition has yet to be made. As a result of the request by National Security Advisor Rice for additional research on the CIA's proposed interrogation techniques, CIA and DOJ personnel contacted individuals at the Department of Defense's Joint Personnel Recovery Agency, JPRA, the agency that administers the SEER school, to gather information about the effects of using the techniques in training exercises. According to CIA officer Redacted, who had, Redacted, joined the CIA's OTS after, Redacted, years at JPRA, an individual with SEER school experience commented that, "Information gleaned via harsh treatment may not be accurate, as the prisoner may say anything to avoid further pain," and that, "Current doctrine for interrogations conducted in the permanent phase of capture may lean towards soft or indirect rounds of questioning." Pursuant to National Security Advisor Rice's request, CIA headquarters personnel also requested information from the interrogation team, particularly Swigert and Dunbar, about the psychological effects of the use of the waterboard and mock burial. The chief of base at detention site Green responded by cable, noting that, "We are a nation of laws, and we do not wish to parse words. A bottom line in considering the new measures proposed is that Abu Zubaydah is being held in solitary confinement against his will, without legal representation, as an enemy of our country, our society, and our people. Therefore, while the techniques described in headquarters meetings and below are administered to student volunteers in the U.S. in a harmless way, with no measurable impact on the psyche of the volunteer, we do not believe we can assure the same here for a man forced through these processes and who will be made to believe this is the future course of the remainder of his life. Station, Detention Site Green Chief of Base, and Detention Site Green personnel will make every effort possible to ensure that subject is not permanently physically or mentally harmed, but we should not say at the outset of this process that there is no risk. As former psychologists for the United States Air Force, Swigert and Dunbar had no direct experience with the waterboard, as it was not used in Air Force SEER training. Nonetheless, they indicated that the waterboard, which they described as an absolutely convincing technique, was necessary to overwhelm Abu Zubaydah's ability to resist. They also responded that they were aware that the Navy, which used the waterboard technique in training, had not reported any significant long-term consequences on individuals from its use. Unlike the CIA's subsequent use of the waterboard, however, the Navy's use of the technique was a single training exercise and did not extend to multiple sessions. Swigert and Dunbar wrote, "Any physical pressure applied to extremes can cause severe mental pain or suffering. Hooding, the use of loud music, sleep deprivation, controlling darkness and light, slapping, walling, or the use of stress positions taken to extreme can have the same outcome. The safety of any technique lies primarily in how it is applied and monitored." On July 24, 2002, the Attorney General verbally approved the use of 10 interrogation techniques, which included the attention grasp, walling, the facial hold, the facial slap, insult slap, cramped confinement, wall standing, stress positions, sleep deprivation, use of diapers, and use of insects. The interrogation team, however, indicated that they intended to wait for the approval to use the waterboard before proceeding with their interrogation of Abu Zubaydah. On July 26, 2002, the Attorney General verbally approved the use of the waterboard. The OLC finalized its classified written legal opinion on August 1, 2002. The earlier CIA request to conduct a mock burial was not formally considered by the OLC. The approved interrogation techniques, along with other CIA interrogation techniques that were subsequently identified and used by the CIA, are referred to as the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, or more commonly by the CIA as EITs. In the course of seeking approval to use the techniques, CIA headquarters advised the Department of Justice and the National Security Advisor that countless more Americans may die unless we can persuade AZ to tell us what he knows. CIA headquarters further represented that the Detention Site Green interrogation team believed Abu Zubaydah continues to withhold critical threat information, and that in order to persuade him to provide that information, the use of more aggressive techniques is required. The cable to Detention Site Green from CIA headquarters documenting the information CIA headquarters had provided to the Department of Justice warned that the legal conclusions are predicated upon the determinations by the interrogation team that Abu Zubaydah continues to withhold critical threat information. According to cables, however, the CIA interrogators at the detention site had not determined that the use of more aggressive techniques was required to persuade Abu Zubaydah to provide threat information. Rather, the interrogation team believed the objective of the coercive interrogation techniques was to confirm Abu Zubaydah did not have additional information on threats to the United States, writing, "Our assumption is the objective of this operation is to achieve a high degree of confidence that Abu Zubaydah is not holding back actionable information concerning threats to the United States beyond that which Abu Zubaydah has already provided." As is described in this summary and in more detail in the full committee study, the interrogation team later deemed the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques a success, not because it resulted in critical threat information, but because it provided further evidence that Abu Zubaydah had not been withholding the aforementioned information from the interrogators. 8. The CIA obtains legal and policy approval for its enhanced interrogation techniques. The CIA does not brief the president. As described, CIA officers represented to National Security Advisor Rice that Abu Zubaydah was withholding information on pending attacks and operatives in the United States. On July 31, 2002, Rice informed Deputy DCI John McLaughlin that, in balancing the application of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against the possible loss of American lives, she would not object to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques if the Attorney General determined them to be legal. During the month of July 2002, the CIA anticipated that the president would need to approve the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques before they could be used. Therefore, in late July 2002, the CIA prepared talking points for a briefing of the president. These draft talking points indicated that the CIA was planning to use interrogation techniques beyond what was normally permitted by law enforcement, and included a brief description of the waterboard interrogation technique. On August 1, 2002, based on comments from White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez, the talking points were revised to eliminate references to the waterboard. CIA records indicate, however, that the talking points were not used to brief the president. On August 2, 2002, the National Security Council legal advisor informed the DCI's chief of staff that Dr. Rice has been informed that there would be no briefing of the president on this matter, but that the DCI had policy approval to employ the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. CIA records state that prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on Abu Zubaydah in 2002, the CIA did not brief Secretary of State Colin Powell or Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, two members of the National Security Council, on the techniques. The committee, including the chairman and vice chairman, was also not briefed on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques prior to their use. Approximately a year later, on July 31, 2003, senior CIA personnel believed the president had still not been briefed on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques.
Note 173. An email from CIA Senior Deputy General Counsel John Rizzo stated that the president will be briefed as part of the regular annual covert action review. Briefing by Rice or VP or counsel to the president or some combination thereof will describe the interrogation program, the fact that some aggressive but AG-approved techniques have been used, but will not apparently get into the details of the techniques themselves.
In August 2003, DCI Tenet told the CIA Office of Inspector General that he had never spoken to the president regarding the Detention and Interrogation Program, or EITs, nor was he aware of whether the president had been briefed by his staff. The May 2004 CIA Inspector General Special Review included a recommendation for the DCI to brief the president regarding the implementation of the agency's detention and interrogation activities, pursuant to the MON of 17 September 2001, or any other authorities, including the use of EITs and the fact the detainees have died. This recommendation is significant. In transmitting the special review to the committee, DCI Tenet responded to the recommendation, noting only that the DCI will determine whether and to what extent the president requires a briefing on the program. On April 6, 2006, CIA Inspector General Helgerson responded to a request from Committee Vice Chairman John D. Rockefeller IV on the status of corrective actions taken in response to the special review recommendations. With regard to a briefing for the president, Helgerson wrote, "Consistent with this recommendation, DCI Tenet, before he left office, and Director Goss, shortly after taking office, both advised me that they had made requests to brief the president."
Note 177. Helgerson then added, "Additionally, public disclosure of many of these activities ensured wide awareness. In light of these developments, I consider the matter closed." The Helgerson letter does not indicate to whom Directors Tenet and Goss, who met regularly with the president, submitted requests to brief the president about the program. The CIA's June 2013 response does not dispute these records. It states, however, that while agency records on the subject are admittedly incomplete, former President Bush has stated in his autobiography that he discussed the program, including the use of enhanced techniques, with DCIA Tenet in 2002, prior to application of the techniques on Abu Zubaydah, and personally approved the techniques. A subsequent memoir by former CIA Acting General Counsel John Rizzo, published January 7, 2014, states, "The one senior U.S. government national security official during this time, from August 2002 through 2003, who I did not believe was knowledgeable about the EITs, was President Bush himself. He was not present at any of the principal committee meetings, and none of the principals at any of the EIT sessions during this period ever alluded to the president knowing anything about them."
Prepared questions and answers for the National Security Council principals in connection with the disclosure of the program in September 2006 and subsequent media outreach also suggest that the president was not briefed at the outset about the CIA's interrogation techniques. In response to the potential question, what role did the president play? Was he briefed on the interrogation techniques, and if so, when? The proposed answer did not assert that the president was briefed, but rather that the president was not, of course, involved in CIA's day-to-day operations, including who should be held by CIA and how they should be questioned. These decisions are made or overseen by CIA directors. CIA records indicate that the first CIA briefing for the president on the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques occurred on April 8, 2006. CIA records state that when the president was briefed, he expressed discomfort with the image of a detainee chained to the ceiling, clothed in a diaper, and forced to go to the bathroom on himself. 9. The CIA uses the waterboard and other enhanced interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah. On August 3, 2002, CIA headquarters informed the interrogation team at Detention Site Green that it had formal approval to apply the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, including the waterboard, against Abu Zubaydah. According to CIA records, only the two CIA contractors, Swigert and Dunbar, were to have contact with Abu Zubaydah. Other CIA personnel at Detention Site Green, including CIA medical personnel and other CIA interrogators with whom he is familiar, were only to observe. From August 4, 2002 through August 23, 2002, the CIA subjected Abu Zubaydah to its enhanced interrogation techniques on a near 24-hour per day basis. After Abu Zubaydah had been in complete isolation for 47 days, the most aggressive interrogation phase began at approximately 11:50 a.m. on August 4, 2002. Security personnel entered the cell, shackled and hooded Abu Zubaydah, and removed his towel. Abu Zubaydah was then naked. Without asking any questions, the interrogators placed a rolled towel around his neck as a collar and backed him up into the cell wall. An interrogator later acknowledged the collar was used to slam Abu Zubaydah against a concrete wall. The interrogator then removed the hood, performed an attention grab, and had Abu Zubaydah watch while a large confinement box was brought into the cell and laid on the floor. A cable states Abu Zubaydah was unhooded and the large confinement box was carried into the interrogation room and placed on the floor so as to appear as a coffin. The interrogators then demanded detailed and verifiable information on terrorist operations planned against the United States, including the names, phone numbers, email addresses, weapon caches, and safe houses of anyone involved. CIA records describe Abu Zubaydah as appearing apprehensive. Each time Abu Zubaydah denied having additional information, the interrogators would perform a facial slap or face grab. At approximately 6:20 p.m., Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded for the first time. Over a 2.5-hour period, Abu Zubaydah coughed, vomited, and had involuntary spasms of the torso and extremities during waterboarding. Detention site personnel noted that, throughout the process, Abu Zubaydah was asked and given the opportunity to respond to questions about threats to the United States, but Abu Zubaydah continued to maintain that he did not have any additional information to provide.
Note 188. CIA contractor Dunbar later told the CIA OIG that their instructions from Chief of Base were to focus on only one issue, that is, Zubaydah's knowledge of plans to attack the U.S. According to the OIG's record of the interview, Dunbar and Swigert could ask that question in a number of ways, but it was the only theme they were authorized by Chief of Base to use with Abu Zubaydah. The acting chief of station in Country Redacted, in an interview with the CIA OIG, stated that there were days at Detention Site Green when the team had no requirements from headquarters, and that CTC did not give the chief of base the flexibility as chief of base to ask other questions besides those related to threats to the United States. The chief of support services at the CIA station stated that Swigert and Dunbar were frustrated that they kept beating Zubaydah up on the same question while getting the same physiologic response from him. Other interviewees described how analytical assumptions about Abu Zubaydah drove the interrogation process. Chief of CTC Jose Rodriguez told the OIG that CTC subject matter experts pointed to intelligence that they said indicated that Abu Zubaydah knew more than he was admitting and thus disagreed with the assessment from Detention Site Green that Abu Zubaydah was compliant. According to the OIG's record of the Jose Rodriguez interview, disagreement between the analysts and interrogators can be healthy, but in this case, Rodriguez believes that the analysts were wrong.
In an email to OMS leadership entitled, So It Begins, a medical officer wrote, "The sessions accelerated rapidly, progressing quickly to the waterboard after large box, walling, and small box periods. Abu Zubaydah seems very resistant to the waterboard. Longest time with the cloth over his face so far has been 17 seconds. This is sure to increase shortly. No useful information so far. He did vomit a couple of times during the waterboard with some beans and rice. It's been 10 hours since he ate, so this is surprising and disturbing. We plan to only feed Ensure for a while now. I'm heading back for another waterboard session." The use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, including walling, attention grasps, slapping, facial hold, stress positions, cramped confinement, white noise, and sleep deprivation, continued in varying combinations 24 hours a day for 17 straight days through August 20th, 2002.
Note, 190. For the first 17 days, the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were used against Abu Zubaydah in varying combinations 24 hours a day. The aggressive phase, as defined by the CIA, continued for an additional 3 days. The CIA continued to use its enhanced interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah until August 30, 2002.
When Abu Zubaydah was left alone during this period, he was placed in a stress position, left on the waterboard with a cloth over his face, or locked in one of two confinement boxes. According to the cables, Abu Zubaydah was also subjected to the waterboard 2 to 4 times a day, with multiple iterations of the watering cycle during each application. The aggressive phase of interrogation continued until August 23, 2002. Over the course of the entire 20-day aggressive phase of interrogation, Abu Zubaydah spent a total of 266 hours, 11 days, 2 hours, in the large, coffin-sized confinement box, and 29 hours in a small confinement box, which had a width of 21 inches, a depth of 2.5 feet, and a height of 2.5 feet. The CIA interrogators told Abu Zubaydah that the only way he would leave the facility was in the coffin-shaped confinement box. According to the daily cables from detention site Green, Abu Zubaydah frequently cried, begged, pleaded, and whimpered, but continued to deny that he had any additional information on current threats to or operatives in the United States. By August 9, 2002, the 6th day of the interrogation period, the interrogation team informed CIA headquarters that they had come to the collective preliminary assessment that it was unlikely Abu Zubaydah had actionable new information about the current threats to the United States. On August 10, 2002, the interrogation team stated that it was highly unlikely that Abu Zubaydah possessed the information they were seeking. On the same day, the interrogation team reiterated a request for personnel from CIA headquarters to travel to the detention site to view the interrogation. A cable stated that the team believed that a first-hand, on-the-ground look is best. But if CIA headquarters personnel could not visit, a video teleconference would suffice. Detention site Green personnel also informed CIA headquarters that it was their assessment that the application of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was approaching the legal limit. The chief of CTC, Jose Rodriguez, responded, "Strongly urge that any speculative language as to the legality of given activities, or more precisely, judgment calls as to their legality vis-a-vis operational guidelines for this activity agreed upon and vetted at the most senior levels of the agency, be refrained from in written traffic, email, or cable traffic. Such language is not helpful." Detention site Green cables describe Abu Zubaydah as compliant, informing CIA headquarters that when the interrogator raised his eyebrow without instructions, Abu Zubaydah slowly walked on his own to the water table and sat down. When the interrogator snapped his fingers twice, Abu Zubaydah would lie flat on the waterboard. Despite the assessment of personnel at the detention site that Abu Zubaydah was compliant, CIA headquarters stated that they continued to believe that Abu Zubaydah was withholding threat information and instructed the CIA interrogators to continue using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. At times, Abu Zubaydah was described as hysterical and distressed to the level that he was unable to effectively communicate. Waterboarding sessions resulted in immediate fluid intake and involuntary leg, chest, and arm spasms, and hysterical pleas. In at least one waterboarding session, Abu Zubaydah became completely unresponsive, with bubbles rising through his open, full mouth. According to CIA records, Abu Zubaydah remained unresponsive until medical intervention, when he regained consciousness and expelled copious amounts of liquid. This experience with the waterboard was referenced in emails, but was not documented or otherwise noted in CIA cables. When two CIA headquarters officers later compared the Abu Zubaydah interrogation videotapes to the cable record, neither commented on this session. A review of the catalog of videotapes, however, found that recordings of a 21-hour period, which included two waterboarding sessions, were missing. CIA personnel at detention site Green reported being disturbed by the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah. CIA records include the following reactions and comments by CIA personnel. August 5, 2002. Want to caution medical officer that this is almost certainly not a place he's ever been before in his medical career. It is visually and psychologically very uncomfortable. August 8, 2002. Today's first session had a profound effect on all staff members present. It seems the collective opinion that we should not go much further. Everyone seems strong for now, but if the group has to continue, we cannot guarantee how much longer. August 8, 2002. Several on the team profoundly affected, some to the point of tears and choking up. August 9, 2002. Two, perhaps three personnel likely to elect transfer away from the detention site if the decision is made to continue with the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. August 11, 2002. Viewing the pressure on Abu Zubaydah on video has produced strong feelings of futility and legality of escalating or even maintaining the pressure. Per viewing the tapes, prepare for something not seen previously. After the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques ended, CIA personnel at the detention site concluded that Abu Zubaydah had been truthful and that he did not possess any new terrorist threat information. As noted, CIA records indicate that Abu Zubaydah never provided the information for which the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were justified and approved. Information on the next terrorist attack and operatives in the United States. Furthermore, as compared to the period prior to August 2002, the quantity and type of intelligence produced by Abu Zubaydah remained largely unchanged during and after the August 2002 use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Nonetheless, CIA headquarters informed the National Security Council that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques used against Abu Zubaydah were effective and were producing meaningful results. A cable from detention site Green, which CIA records indicate was authored by Swigert and Dunbar, also viewed the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah as a success. The cable recommended that the aggressive phase at detention site Green should be used as a template for future interrogation of high-value captives, not because the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques produced useful information, but rather because their use confirmed that Abu Zubaydah did not possess the intelligence that CIA headquarters had assessed Abu Zubaydah to have. The cable from the detention site stated, "Our goal was to reach the stage where we have broken any will or ability of subject to resist or deny providing us information, intelligence, to which he had access. We additionally sought to bring subject